AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On this week's episode, we grab our coffee and head to the teacher's lounge with fellow educator Amber Davis. She is the 2023 Teacher of the Year, theater queen, and expert in organized chaos. I'm Michael Thomas, living proof that nurses not only eat their young, we grade them too.
And I'm Sierra. I teach vet techs, which means half of my job is convincing students that, yes, the poop sample is very important.
And I'm Amber, high school English and theater teacher, which means I'm fluent in both Shakespeare and teenage drama.
And this is Really, the podcast where we prove that life really has no lesson plan.
No, it doesn't.
Not at all. Oh my gosh. Amber, welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much.
I am so excited that you're here. We both are. Listeners, a little background. We have known Amber for, feels like forever. It's probably been about 15 years. I've always known of Amber, like at Theater Bristol when I started 26 years ago.
Legend.
Yes, she is. And then, but we actually like really became friends about 15 years ago when I was still a little scared of her, but she.
It was a healthy fear.
It was a healthy fear. She just has a scary face. Scary look on her face. Let me put it that way.
Yes.
True. But Amber has been teaching for 12 years. Like I said, we met through the theater. We survived tech weeks, curtain calls, community theater legends, we'll call them, grad school, panic attacks. And today, y'all, me and Sierra and Amber are going to be taking it to the teacher's lounge. We're talking about that noble caffeine-fueled art of teaching. Obviously, from very different perspectives, Amber is a high school English and theater teacher. Sierra is our resident veterinary technology educator. And I am a nursing teacher. Teach future registered nurses. Amber, in your own words, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am feeling a little old. I've gotten into buying plants. That is my new thing.
Welcome.
Plant collecting.
Okay.
I also learned the past few weeks that though I can grow a lot of things very well. Mums, I cannot keep alive. I'm not.
Same.
I, please help me understand how, what am I doing wrong?
I'm not the one.
Okay. Well, so plants, I like plants. I also have two kids. I don't want to talk about them, so we'll move right along. For anyone local, you know that Pal's is our big fast food chain restaurant around here, and I hate it. I think it's disgusting. Everyone else,
more for me.
Okay. It's so disgusting, and the line to Pal's is always so long. It goes out into the street.
Yep.
You can't even see to turn out of there. It's just, well, their sweet tea is good, but I don't drink it anymore. So, yeah, it's gross. I can't stand FaceTime. Mm-hmm. Don't FaceTime me. Don't. Well, first of all, I'm just going to be looking at myself the whole time. I can never find a good angle. So I'm always holding the phone up, you know, like above my head so that I get the best angles. And then it's weird because my arm goes tired and numb and I can't move it down because then I'm, don't do it. Also, don't take your animal into a restaurant, please. That is all. That is all you need to know about me.
That's you in a nutshell.
All right. I'm an open book.
You are. You are. Mm. Yeah. All right. Sierra, you ready to get this party started?
And oh, Amber, I'm so excited. I'm so glad that you're here and doing this with us. Mm-hmm. I think it's, dare I say, essential. It's essential. So I think we've got to start with the real question, the origin of all this. What inspired you to teach?
Huh. I wish I could tell you a beautiful story about how I just was born to be a teacher. And I just, it's like, I know I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. that is not what happened. I actually didn't start teaching until I was 30.
So a year ago?
Yes. Last year.
Yeah.
I was teacher of the year my first year as a teacher.
Yeah, right out the gate.
That's how good I am.
Well,
it's true. Okay. So I was going to Northeast State, actually. And I had a theater teacher, Elizabeth Sloan, I think is her name. And I'm not sure if she's still there. But I was going to Northeast State to be a nurse because I had gotten laid off from my job. And I was like, I have to get a job where I don't have to worry about being laid off anymore. Like I have kids. And so I was taking a theater class because that's just what I love to do. Elizabeth Sloan was like, Amber, you're not a nurse. I was going to go be a nurse, you know?
She knew you.
Yeah. If you know, you know. And she said, at least for your undergrad, she's like, think about it later. At least for your undergrad, take more classes, you know, that you want to do. Why don't you try education? I'm like, ah, I don't even like children. not even a little bit. And she goes, yeah, but you've got a way. And I really didn't know what that meant. So I was like, okay, well, I'll give it a try. And that's how I ended up here. And I love it. It wasn't a lifelong goal for me. But, you know, I can think back about when I was little, I spent the summers with my grandparents in Bluff City. And I didn't have a lot of kids around me because they were, you know, either in like daycare or somewhere else. My little friends were, they did Girls Inc., I think. Anyway, I would set up this little whiteboard and teach to the way. And I didn't even think about that until recently, a couple of years ago, I started deep diving on those memories. So maybe I was born to do it. I don't know, but
I think you were.
Yeah. Natural.
Love you.
They better. I threaten them.
Okay.
That's what I always think.
Oh, that's awesome, Amber. Thank you so much for that. I do think it's, you're a natural teacher leader.
I love you.
Right out the gate.
She's an entertainer.
Yeah.
Isn't that it's like I'm on a stage all day long.
Yeah.
It is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. You
know? And 90% of teaching is acting and 10% is acting like you actually know what you're talking about. Yes.
Oh my God. I have to pretend all day long that I know what I'm talking about. And it's convincing.
I feel like that was good.
Yeah.
So we're all teachers, which is kind of crazy, right? Like how did we end up here? Mm-hmm. So tell me what do you guys think was like, you know, a moment where you were like, okay, this is it. I love this. I love this job. I'm so glad I'm an educator. Or conversely, were you like, okay, why am I here? What did I do?
How did we get here?
Your educational journey.
Sierra, I'm going to let you go on this one first.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I just worked on the floor so much and I had had an interesting experience with my classes and my program that I went through. And I'll leave it at that. And so I always thought, I wonder how that could have been different. Uh-huh. So there was always that little hint in my mind, little seed to grow. And then I was working at a clinic here in North Carolina. And one of my dear friends, Lindsay, she mentioned to me, you need to get a job here. You need to come do this. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. But I needed money extra. And so I was like, okay, well, let's give it a go. And then Dr. Lori Tapp, who has since passed, she just saw something in me. She gave me a whole class, whole course to teach nutrition. I said, I don't know anything about this. I actually in my school, I have failed this one. So she said, well, then great. You know it even more now. I was like, oh, geez. Okay. And so working with her, she kind of helped me build that confidence. I never really thought that I would ever be a teacher, but it just kind of all came in together. And now I absolutely love what I do. And I love the lesson plan and working hard and building each year. And I also work a little on the floor, but I wouldn't trade that any day for teaching. So
I do remember when you, that first semester when you were like, building your classes from the ground up, and you were, you were like, by the end of that semester, you were like, I think I like this.
Yeah. You also become so smart when you have to teach.
Oh, that's the only way to learn. I'm fully convinced of that.
Yeah. I mean, it is, you're not wrong. And two,
I didn't remember it.
You get to regurgitate it so many times that it's like, well, by the fourth time I do this, I will know something.
You know, you really have to know it when you have to try and explain it to somebody else.
Yeah.
You really have to think about it differently.
When you have to dumb it down.
Yeah.
And that might not be a great way to put it, but for real, when you've got to get somebody else to understand it, it's like,
Yeah,
that's a skill too. I don't think everybody can do that. You can be
it's an art.
Brilliant, but you not everybody can teach that the way that good teachers do.
And then you think about all the what ifs. Like you sit there and you prepare that lecture, and then you think about, well, what if they ask me this? Then what if they ask me that? And you take yourself down a rabbit hole, and then you get through the lecture, and you're like, thank God no one asked any questions.
Sometimes I like for them to ask me questions.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't.
In the early years.
No. I'm with you on, like, in the early years, I was like, oh, please, Lord.
Right.
I don't want to look
down. Reading the PowerPoints.
Yes. and on into it, and I really do feel like being a clinical educator, because our boss at the time when I was a clinical educator, shout out Velvet, she really trained us to, you know, don't put every word you're going to say on your PowerPoint.
Oh God, please don't.
You know, you had your PowerPoint is your outline. You have to go from that and teach from it. Use it as your guide. And that way they can take notes and they can, you know, learn that stuff. So I honestly became a teacher because Jess and I applied to nurse practitioner school and we did not get in.
Okay.
But we were alternates. And then they said, but you can do nurse educator school.
Hey, that's the universe.
And I was like, I didn't really want to do NP school anyway, because I'd worked with so many of them that I was like, I don't want to do this, but I don't want to be stuck in a clinic or on the floor forever.
Yeah.
So it was, Jess and I got accepted and we just kind of went, and the more I did it, the more I enjoyed it. And the more I was like, oh, this is, I can do this like theater, like a stand-up routine almost. And I can make people laugh. And I feel like if they laugh and you entertain them, they will retain what you're entertaining. So, that was my entree into the world of teaching. I have a family of teachers. My mother was a teaching assistant. My sister is a teacher, now a librarian. My dad was on the school board. So I decided
it's in the family.
To do medical because teachers, as we all three know now, we don't go into it for the money. We sure do not.
Stop.
But let me back up and say this. So all three of us have a history at Theater Bristol. That's how we all met. Do you all think, like, I mean, if we're thinking like theater crossover, how has performing, how has improv, stage management? I mean, I know you teach theater, but at first you taught English, just straight up English.
Yeah.
Stage management, being a director in the theater, how do you think that has helped you all in the classroom? What's one thing you thought teaching would be like that's turned out hilariously different based on our theater experiences?
Gosh, I really thought that the kids would listen, you know. No. That's funny.
That is vastly different from an audience.
So much different. I thought they would just be like, oh my gosh, she's so smart, I'm going to listen to everything. And that's not true. And where theater, I think, really helped was improv, you know, thinking on your feet. And like you said, those questions that you get asked that sometimes just throw you for a loop, and you just have to quickly think of how to respond. Also in classroom management, you have to really be able to throw it back, especially with high school. So being able to improv and to think on your feet, something that you learn in theater, it is the number one skill I think you need to have, especially when you're dealing with teenagers. It's so important. I don't think I would be as good of a teacher as I am. I am good.
You are.
No, I'm just kidding. I still have imposter syndrome. But anyway, I don't think I would be where I am without having had done theater.
Same.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just made me wittier, which ties into the whole like a clap back and comeback. I think I'm able to be like, no, actually, no, you're wrong. Per my last email, per my last syllabus, no. Yeah. But not necessarily on all of that. I think it's more so within ourselves, because I too struggle with the imposter syndrome, is the ability to an action, right? Like whatever you've got going on in your life, the baggage that you walk in there with, or the stress that you walk in there with, you're just like, all right, I just got to leave it all on the stage, the linoleum. But
yeah. Leave it all at the podium. Yeah.
At the podium. That's right.
Leave it all on that PowerPoint.
Yeah, for sure. Marvel. So I think it did. It did help. Essential.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I would have loved to have been, you know, famous actor, treading the Broadway stage. But as many of our friends, who some will have on the pod, have done and become professional actors, that's a hard, hard life. You know, nursing and teaching, we've got jobs, vet teching, you've got a job. Law enforcement, you've usually got a job. There's a few things where there is a level of job security. Being an entertainer, whatever that might be, even now with all the TikToks and the, you know, content creators, thank God we have amazingly talented friends, but some of them, I mean, they have gone through some very dry spells, and I'm not that person. I can't do it.
I can't take rejection.
I can't do it all the time. And it's admirable to them. But once I found teaching, and I was like, oh, I get an audience again. It's one of those things where your original career might have beat you down a little bit. And teaching, it kind of fills up my cup more than nursing, and definitely nursing administration.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not upset that I don't have to wrestle 150-pound Great Danes. I'm not upset about that. And when I say wrestle, I also use fear-free, low-stress handling and all that. So it just takes a lot longer. I'm not wrestling, for the record. I am fear-free certified. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think too, it's as teachers, and maybe you guys can piggyback off of this. I get so excited when I start a lecture about whatever it is. And I have my favorites, but usually the students actually make fun of me, because I'll be like, okay, guys, today we're going to talk about something. It's my favorite. And they're like, you say that every week. And I'm like, whoa, well, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't love the endocrine system, but it has to, you have to have it. It's just hard. But the cardiovascular system, that digestive tract, I think it's when we are so excited about the material and that they're excited for them, then it happens, you know?
Yes. I love it. One of the former clinical educators I used to work with, she called it the light bulb moment.
Oh.
Yeah. When you see the light bulb turn on,
it's beautiful.
When they get it. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Like, I love that part when they're like, oh, or, you know, even older people, because, you know, when they come up to me, nurses that have been nurses for 100 years that I used to teach in clinical education would come up to me and be like, I didn't understand that forever.
We just did it.
Yeah. And they were like, and the way you described it, the way you explained it, help me understand it. I don't know. It's a real nice way to pat yourself on the back.
That's right. So speaking of patting, so we all somehow survive a year, or every year we roll in and we're excited about that little break. That's not really a break. It's actually just preparing for the next semester and trying to breathe through a little bit of it. Amber, since you're our guest, after all, May we ask you some questions about teaching the youths, so the younger generations than the college level students
the babies.
Yes. May we ask you some questions?
Yeah.
The Gen Alphas.
Oh yeah.
This is one thing I've wondered about. Do students even do cursive anymore? Do they know cursive at all? Do they learn it? How is that taught anymore?
No.
That makes me sense.
and here's a confession to both of my children. Jacob's 23 and Aiden is 16. Neither one can sign their names. Neither one. They were never taught it in school, and I never taught them because I just assumed, well, I assumed Jacob would get taught, you know, second grade or whatever it was that we learned it, but no. But they don't have time, you know, to teach it. They don't. No, they don't. I do have a student right now who, this kid is so cool, cooler than we could have ever been in high school. And he writes in cursive. Everything he turns in is cursive. I'm having kids write a lot more than I used to because of AI. And he's always writing in cursive, but they generally know they don't know it.
Wow.
That blows my mind. Mm-hmm. I've seen the memes, you know, it's like adults writing in code, you know, cursive is like code, you know, and these babies don't know what we're talking about. Do you think handwriting, of course, you're right. I didn't think about it. The educators, especially public educators, because of standardized testing, do not have time to teach that. Do you think?
I mean, when you think about your own life, how often are you actually using it? It's not really like something that is going to make or break your life.
Sure. Yeah. Understand. Yeah.
Do you think handwriting, though, as a skill, do you think it should be taught, or have we just moved to?
I wish. You know, like I wish.
Or is the typing, is the keyboard our new literacy?
I wish that they were better writers. You know, I spent my younger years just writing Amber Loves insert name here over and over again.
Make it pretty.
Yeah. And to perfect that writing. And then, you know, I would compare my handwriting to my friends. And 100%. I thought it was just important that I had the cutest handwriting and I wanted to be able to do bubble letters. And
yes, the bubbles.
But they're not, I know, but they're not passing notes back and forth. There's not,
they're texting.
Oh. They're texting and Snapchatting. So it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
I wish they could write better just because, you know, this year I've really tried to embrace the handwriting of the essays, a lot of things because of, you know, trying to combat AI.
Yeah.
And make sure your critical thinking skills don't just go away and I can't read it. But
okay. Oh,
listen, some of these youngins I'm teaching, especially the ones that are coming right out of high school, this looks like hostage letters.
Yeah. Well, they're not practicing like we did.
No, they made it out of wood.
Yeah. For real.
A pencil out of wood.
You remember that part in The Bodyguard where dude's like gluing on the letters for the ransom note or whatever it was, that threat note that Rachel Mayer was getting? That I feel like half the time that's what, when they hand me a written thing, my young ones, I'm like, oh, somebody gonna get killed.
I mean, I'll get papers where they don't know how to use the margins, so they just write all the way across the paper. Uh-huh. They don't care that there's lines there.
That,
it's
hard. I know.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that I loved cursive. I remember being forced to do it, but that was fine. Right. We didn't know any different. You just had to do it. A lot of times I had no idea what my Nana was trying to tell me in a card, especially besides at the end, love you, Nana.
True.
Right. There's some kind of good, like good stuff in there.
Right,
it was a rite of passage.
Oh, I'm going to be in second grade or whatever. I'm going to learn cursive next year.
I was pumped.
Yeah,
when I knew I was going to have Miss Smith, Vivian Smith, and I was going to have her, and I was going to learn cursive.
Yeah,
I was pumped.
Yeah, they don't do it anymore at all.
Well, it sounds like cursive itself is almost like a lost art in a way.
No, it is. Yeah, I would agree for sure. Yeah,
it's like a lost art. So are there any of those kind of similar lost arts that you think deserve a comeback? Like, for example, when students come to us, a lot of times we have to teach them, and probably Michael Thomas, you do this too. You've got to teach them heart rates and respiratory rates. So you're counting, you're listening to that beat drop in that stethoscope on that heart, or watching someone breathe.
Rhythm.
And then you're also watching the clock, right? So this is, we have to teach them almost like analog clock watching. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a shock to me. That was a shock. And also like home ec, woodshop, typing, debate class. Are there any other lost arts that need to bring it on back?
Well, bless them. Their debate class now is social media.
Oh,
well, we have them all at my, so, and this is,
oh, good.
We've got, I mean, with the exception of home ec, specifically, we don't have a specific home ec class, but we do have like a yarn club at school. And and we have auto mechanics. There's a welding class. There's now. So I think for a while we kind of went away from vocational things, and it's starting to make a good comeback now.
Oh, nice. So good.
That makes me happy to hear.
Yeah. Debate. Well, I actually, I'm teaching speech next semester, but I started doing speech and debate again. So the really hard part is when we say things like, you know, why don't we do this in school? Why don't we do this anymore? We don't teach them these skills that they need to know for their life, is that they don't care. They don't
apathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it's not, if they can't find relevancy to them, they are not going to care. This is all one of my biggest pet peeves is you see it all the time is, you know, we should teach kids how to do taxes in school and they don't know how to pay a mortgage. Why would they? Mm-hmm. Why would we? Mm-hmm. Why would I teach them? Who's going to teach them in school? But they do learn it. I mean, they take math for 12 years and they don't pay attention. Our kids have personal finance, but they don't care. It does not have relevancy to them. And I wouldn't have cared. I was a terrible student, and that's the honest truth. I was.
Same.
I'm sure my teachers hated me, and but I wouldn't have cared. I didn't care, and they don't care, especially 9th grade, 10th grade. Now, when they start working in 11th and 12th grade, but still, they don't care. They get their paycheck, they cash.
Yeah,
sure.
They don't care. But we do have a lot of those things, and if we don't have them, like as a class, there's clubs that they can join. They don't want to. They really, it's so different from us. You know, we always wanted to be out and together and doing things. They want to be alone. Mm-hmm. But it's because they socialize all day, every day in a way that we never got to. So hang out with your friends to talk to them.
Sure.
These kids don't have to leave the house to talk to all their friends at one time.
Sure.
I
hadn't thought of it that way, but that's very true.
Yeah. School is different. It's not even a place for them to socialize anymore because they do it all the time. Anyway, I feel like I went off there, but
that was great. I remember getting off the school bus and going home and pulling out the yellow pages to look up my friends' numbers to call them to be like, hey, do you want to meet outside? Do you want to meet at the park and go and play? And so play outside. And it sounds like the things that you offer at your school, I'm over here like, what? We didn't have that. I mean, I went to Sullivan South. It's not even a thing anymore, but whatever. And they ripped up the duct tape. Okay. I'm down. It sounds like they have these incredible things, but the students, would you say that they don't have the academic maturity?
Oh, they don't have any maturity.
One thing that kills me too is folks of our generation and Gen X, when, you know, I'm not a parent, don't particularly want to be one. Sierra's not either.
Well, I'm part-time, right?
Well, that's true. That's true. You are a stepson.
Hey, Noah.
And Amber doesn't fuss about her children in this way because we've talked about this. When they fuss about these generations, I just want to look at them and be like, well, you raised them.
I can promise you, I have never been surprised when I met a parent.
I'm sure.
Been surprised.
That tracks.
And we did raise them. And actually, interestingly enough, we had this conversation about an article I read that Dead Poets Society and the way that these kids are.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yes, that you shared.
They are internalizing it, and then they hate the ending. They're traumatized. Mm-hmm. And because of him getting fired, which is sad, not traumatic, because they use that word like,
literally,
I'm traumatized.
Literally.
But they're upset that there isn't systemic change. Why didn't they do anything to make it different? Mm-hmm. They're not okay with just the individual kids changing by mm-hmm. what they learned. And they're just different, but we raised them that way. Mm-hmm. They get trigger warnings because we gave them to them.
Yes.
They're soft because we made them that way, because we didn't want them to have it as bad as we did. And what we feel is bad, because I think our lives were pretty great. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all have our own things.
Sure.
And I know all three of us very well, our backgrounds, but like in generally the 80s and the 90s were a great time.
Yeah.
The true trauma of 2025 is happening to them right now. Mm-hmm. And we have maybe done them a disservice by trying to soften everything for them. And now they're living through this world, which is so odd and off, but it's us. Yeah. We've done it to them.
Yeah. It makes me sad to a point, though, when I hear, you know, people fussing about him, and I'm like, the call's coming from inside the house, Barbara.
Amen.
I mean, I'm just thinking, like, as a non-parent looking at the parents, I'm like, well, I know.
How
old your kid?
I blame myself for most things that they do.
I will say, though, your kids you've got some decently well-adjusted youngins.
Yeah, because I beat them.
That's true.
I'm just kidding. I've never beat them. Never. Well, that one time I did have to spank Jacob when he pulled my hair in the car. He was like 3 or 4. He was terrified. He did it, and then he was like instantly like, oh, God.
Oh, I'd be scared.
Let me just say, we have a saying in our friend group, and it goes something like, did you go full on Amber?
Did you go Amber?
Oh, did you just Amber out did on that person?
I say it about myself. I went full Amber this morning.
I'll never forget that one time you were like, oh, I just went full Amber at the McDonald's drive-thru.
I did. I won't tell you guys what I did out loud on this podcast because it's mean. I had to call McDonald's and apologize.
Well, she did.
She talked to me very soon after, and she was like, I'm not a good person.
But I wasn't medicated back then.
That's true. We're all, hey, listen, all three of us, mm-hmm. very well medicated.
By the power of yoga.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I don't think so.
Yeah. That's just you, Sierra's our little yogi teacher here. One thing I wanted to, I haven't been in public schools in forever. What's the most outdated thing in your classroom?
Furniture.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm. Now my classroom specifically is a little bit different, but when I'm talking about classrooms in general, they're sitting in desks that are connected. It is a seat connected to a table, and there is no room.
Oh, still?
Yeah.
I could barely fit in those when I was in high school.
It's rough. And high school kids are fully grown. They're pretty much adults. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds.
Adult size.
They are mentally
not.
No.
They are. I don't know. Yeah.
But physically, they're sitting in these tiny little desks. Now, my specific class, that question you asked me about, like, what I thought teaching would be like. Do you remember the projector?
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Oh, my God.
I still got one.
I thought about through.
Do you really?
Oh, my God. I'm so jealous.
I use it.
I don't. Oh, my God. Can I come use it? Okay.
Yeah. Like, look at this pack.
I thought about it. Through all of my education classes, like I'm going to use that projector and I'm going to draw pictures. And there's no projectors anymore. No, we don't have them.
No. Now we do have this thing. I can't get it to turn on, but we do have this thing that looks like a projector. It's basically a camera, like a gooseneck camera.
Yes. It's called Elmo.
I have an Elmo.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had an Elmo. I could work that. This is like an Elmo, but I think they got it on the Temu. Mm. And
they got wish.
Yeah, they got the wish version, and it will. I can't get it to work. But I guess that is the closest thing we have to a projector right now is an Elmo.
Now, we still have those old TVs in our room. None of them work. They're not connected, but like those little box TVs that you used to watch.
Fatback TVs?
Channel One News on.
Shut your mouth.
They're still in there for some reason. I don't
know. Like hanging on the wall, yes. Precariously, yes. About to kill somebody.
Yes. Oh my God.
They're just there.
That seems like a health hazard.
It's
been up there for 20 seconds. Now, I'm going to say about these desks. Are you talking like the back crack desks?
Yes. Yes.
I do remember cracking my back on those, but I also remember my butt going numb because they were very ergonomically okay.
Yeah.
Not okay.
Yeah. No, I knew exactly what you meant.
Yeah.
They were awful.
Yeah. It's pretty rough. Now my classroom, I have tables and chairs, and I'm slowly gathering more comfy seating, and I have to do it in little bits, but ETSU has this really cool, whenever they surplus their stuff, if you're a public school teacher in Tennessee, you can go to ETSU and they have like basically like the surplus room where they're getting rid of all their old furniture and
nice
all kinds of stuff, desks, cabinets, printers. And so it's a free for all in there. It's crazy. You just have to have an ID that says you teach in a public school.
Shut up. That's awesome.
And it's amazing. I've gotten a lot of stuff, especially teaching theater. It's hard to gather set pieces.
Sure.
So I've gotten a lot of things out there and,
is this like a sale they have? Like
it's free.
Oh,
up
coming over the mountain.
What a resource!
It's so cool. It is so cool. I have these really cool maroon chairs that you put together, and when you put them together, like they're like a twin size bed. And I know this because last year. Okay. Last year, no. Hear me out. Last year. My kids wanted to do a senior prank and they went to the principal and she was like, okay, well, here's some things that you can do and you'll need a teacher to supervise you. Who do they pick? You know who they picked.
Yeah, you do.
Teacher of the year.
One of my kids came to me and this girl, I love her. If it had been anybody else, I probably would have said no, but this particular angel was like, can we do this? And I'm like, okay, well, let me think about this. So they wanted to go camping in the parking lot. Like spend the night and camp out so that when all the teachers got to school in the morning, all the kids would be out camped they wanted to camp inside of our football stadium. But we talked about it and, you know, the administration and I like probably wouldn't be a good idea because the city, you know, is involved with like helping to pay for that. And if anything happened, it would be like a really bad situation. And, you know, like I love those seniors, but you can't trust them all. And so they wanted to stay spend the night. And this particular girl was like, what if we stayed in the school? And I was like, no, we're not staying in the school. You know, I cannot let you stay in the school by yourself. I'm not letting you in the school building to sleep. And they were like, but what if a teacher stayed with us? And I was like, no, good luck finding one. And
this sounds like a lock-in.
It was. It was just me.
And so you said yes.
I said yes. And I met them all outside and I looked at them very seriously. And I said, we're not taking anybody out of this world and we're not bringing anybody in this world. I threatened them. They were pretty good. There was a couple shenanigans.
You stayed the whole night?
The whole night I spent in the school with the kids because they wanted to.
Did you sleep?
For like maybe an hour. So I was sleeping. We have like a couch in the office and I was kind of like sleeping down there because they were all contained to one floor.
Oh, okay.
And, I was terrified.
That's a big school.
Yes.
At night, in the dark.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
So I'm super creepy. I'm just afraid that a teacher is going to come in the morning and they're going to be sleeping on the couch and they're not going to know it's me because no one knew this was happening. It was a secret.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah. It's a prank. Sorry.
It was a prank. So they had taken sticky notes and put them they were all over the walls, sticky notes. It was a very harmless prank. Nothing bad happened. And
sure.
But I was like, a teacher's going to come in and they're going to find me and call 911 because there's gonna be like a homeless vagrant here on this couch. So I went upstairs to my classroom because that's where the kids weren't. I'm like, I'm just going to hide in here. And I slept on those little back to the maroon chairs that I got from the ETSU surplus. So thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
So ETSU, they gave you a decent
are coming through.
Well, a decent hour.
Decent hour sleep.
Yeah.
Very so nice.
I wasn't planning on telling that story, but there you go. That's what teaching is like.
For the children.
For the children.
The one thing I hoped for And I don't even know why, because it was about gone by the time I graduated. Do y'all remember the mimeograph machine?
Yes.
With the purple ink?
Yes.
Sierra, that might be too old for you.
I don't know what that is. I'm sorry.
It was like the world's first copiers.
Amazing.
It had purple ink. I don't even know how it worked, but you like cranked it. Mm-hmm. It was like a manual copier. Mm-hmm. Probably developed by like, I don't know, Aristotle.
Plato. I've never heard.
You know, one of the old people.
I think I saw that on the Epcot ride.
Okay. it was like the original printing press. And I always thought that was so cool. I mean, now don't get me wrong. I love a copy maker, a copy machine. Yeah. I don't know why. I loved a mimeograph machine. They were smelly.
Oh my God. The smell of carbon paper. Oh, I could sniff it all day long. Mm-hmm. It smells so
good. Yeah. So that's, I mean, there's, I miss the fatback TVs on the carts.
Oh, we don't have that anymore.
I miss the, well, that was a health hazard. So it's a good thing you don't. Yeah. I miss those. I do miss those. Yeah.
What about that smart board thing? Did y'all get that smart board back in the day?
Some of my teachers have them in my school now.
Okay. But we got them at Sullivan South, but nobody knew how to work it. So they just sat there up there for about 2 years. And then I left, obviously. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't work well either. I mean, not once you smart. Figure out how to use them, they break. So.
Yeah, that's true. Nice. Okay. I've used them a few times and nope, I would be writing notes mm-hmm. on the board or like writing a diagram
and then your hand just goes blah, blah, blah.
And no it would literally I don't know if I touched something or my gut touched it because you know it sticks out but then it would just all erase
like fun times
whew.
Okay so 86 smart board got it
yeah
bye-bye.
They're not that smart.
They're not that smart.
You know how sometimes you need a cup of coffee, but your heart rate's like, yeah, please don't. Mm-hmm, that's me. Which is why I'm obsessed with Savorista. They make small batch coffee that's actually craft roasted, full of flavor, but without all that caffeine. I've been drinking their decaf and half calf blends lately, and listen, if you think decaf can't taste good, Savorista is about to change your entire personality. It's bold. It's smooth. It doesn't taste like sadness. You can drink it at 9 p.m. without regretting all your life choices. Okay, so if you're looking for that, you know, cozy cup that won't have you reorganizing your pantry at 2 a.m., check out Savorista.com. Savorista, Savorista.com. And use the code REALLYPOD at checkout for a little something off your first order. That little something, 25%. Mm-hmm. Your nervous system will thank you.
Okay. So, Amber, Thomas has been educating me on the Gen Alphas, the youths of today. I didn't even know what that was until we started doing all this. And that there's also, you know, there's the Gen Z, the Millennials, the Gen Alphas. We've talked about some things that are not like awesome, that are different, obviously, from when we went to school and all that. But what about those that Gen Alpha, are they doing anything better?
Well,
like, oh, well, that's good. You took notes and now you changed.
I will tell you that there is this level of magical apathy. And I don't mean it as in I'm apathetic towards schoolwork or my teachers or respect. I mean, just in general, and with every kind of subject that I wish that we as millennials and Gen Z and boomers could get back to, because I think that we care too much about what everybody else does or says in their lives. Yeah. I'm only going to use this as an example because it's an easy one to use. But like if we have a student who's very out as gay, or in the LGBTQ community, even our kids who aren't maybe associated with that group or those kind of people in general, they don't like, I've known little Timmy was gay since kindergarten. Like, mm-hmm. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care what Timmy does. They are apathetic towards what each other do. Now, they still have teenage drama and they.
Sure.
It's God. But they mostly, and I think they don't really care what everybody is doing in their lives and their personal lives or what people are saying on the news, in the media. It doesn't affect them. And I think that's just beautiful.
Kind of in their own bubble.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. I think it's an individualism a little bit different than our individualism.
Sure.
We want everyone to be like us as millennials. Like we want to, it's I, me. And they are also that way, but they also don't care what your I and your me is. You know,
like even I like that. That's a good way to put it.
I get highly offended. And it's so funny that we talked about The Witcher earlier and how you used to not like Yennefer. Like that went right through me. Like I was like, how can you not? Like, what is wrong with you? I was so aggressively angry.
I'm coming around.
It's true.
So aggressively angry. And if I like a thing and you don't like it, like you are the problem.
That's
weird. But the kids aren't, they don't care if you don't like it. They're like, whatever, you're weird, but okay. You know, that's you. Not me. I'm like, I'm never talking to you again. I hate your whole family.
I will say one thing, like positive I see out of this rugged individualism that our younger folks exhibit is they do definitely have, I don't know if it's more tolerance, more acceptance, more whatever. I don't think it's that they don't care. I think it's that they just don't let it bother them.
Yeah. I mean,
because I do think a lot of them care about certain things. I do think a lot of them are very, a lot of these youngins I've got now, you know, because I've got some 18, 19, 20 year olds. They're very caring. But they're about the right things, right. You know, that like they don't want to see inequality. They don't want to see injustice. They want to see everybody treated fairly. And that's a nice change, you know, 100%. So I would, you know, it's a very different type of apathy. And maybe it's not, I don't know what word, I don't know. I love that you're using that word, but I don't know. I don't feel like they don't care. I just feel like they're not, they just, they get bothered by the right things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they see it. And I think I see it in, you know, I can very distinctly remember, and maybe I have a little bit of a different perspective as a teacher than I don't see everything, but I remember as a student, a very defined lines in cliques, right? Mm-hmm. Very defined, like who you were was who you hung out with. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that as much. I mean, it's still there. You still have, you know, popular kids and you still have, you know, there are some groups, but there's such a more of a blur than they're used to, like crossing of those lines. Like there's not really very strict lines to follow as far as like who you spend time with. Like it's, you're not going to get ostracized because you are hanging out with somebody from a different group.
I like that.
It's beautiful. It really is. And I know we'd spend a lot of time like with kindness. My principal is very, she gives a kindness quote every day or every week. There's a new quote and that's pretty cool. And it's all about like, you know, treating each other with respect and dignity. And I think that they do for the most part, there's outliers of course, but yeah. I think generalistically, they're just better as humans. They're better at being a human than we are.
I like that at a younger age.
I hope you. Yeah, we were pretty rotten.
I think that was a bit shallow, but
yeah, I was gonna say I can't speak for Sierra because she is a little younger than us. But
I think I was dance. So
mine like, and Amber,
whatever.
Ooh, we were pretty rotten.
Rotten.
I'll just say it. We were. Sorry to say, but we were so. Anyway, moving on. I've loved this. This is just fun. Amber, we want your hot takes on some things. I know you've given us a few hot takes on some things already, but we've got a few questions. First one thing you wish non-teachers, i.e. maybe parents or grandparents, but one thing you wish non-teachers understood about teaching.
We are not the enemy. We don't make up the rules. Mm-hmm. We don't mm-hmm. use the curriculum. Mm-hmm. We just want your student to learn and be healthy and happy. And mm-hmm. we are not out to fail them, to get them. I want to work with you. And it is not us. We are not the bad guys.
You are not the victims. I would love to say that. Oof,
golly gee.
Okay. Most overused buzzword or initiative?
Data.
Data?
Data.
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 Data. Data is used only for subjects in school that are tested and data.
Hold on. You saying that reminded me. Where does your data come from for like English and theater?
There's no theater data.
Right. So like how do they – so what are their metrics coming from for like how you're doing?
They stay testing. Standardized testing. They don't – outside of tested subjects, I can do – I'm an expert in my field.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm an expert, and I am. But like –
We know.
And, thank you. In English, I'm not. And I'm a three, which is average, like 1 to 5. You know, I'm just a three because we are only judged upon the data that our students testing. It's all state and standardized testing, which is crazy. It is not just the downfall of education, but mm-hmm. of humanity. Mm-hmm. It is why everything is horrible and terrible in this world, mm-hmm. period.
I was talking about this in mine and Sierra's majors that we teach in. You know, we have those big old standardized licensure exams at the end. And I do feel like over the last 10 years that I've been teaching in nursing, the focus has mainly been them passing that exam. And I do feel like when I was in school, at least 21 years ago, yes, there was obviously a focus on the NCLEX, but I do feel like the actual focus of school was how are you going to take care of your patients, not how are you going to pass this test?
Yeah.
Sierra, what's your...
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. I've seen transitions. It's a little bit different, but I think for ours, it's called the VTNA. And one thing that I focus on as a goal for my students is, hey, I'm here to prepare you for, well, we're here as all colleagues and instructors. We're here to prepare you for the real life, to be ready to go out there, to holding, restraining dogs and cats, to running anesthesia, to whatever. Mm-hmm. And we also are preparing you for the exam. So when we have to teach you these weird diagnostic laboratory tests that I have been teaching for 10 years, but I've never even actually done in my entire mm-hmm. life, mm-hmm. you got to at least know about it. I have to teach you for the exam as well as teach you for the real world. Mm-hmm. So it is a mixed bag. And sometimes I think they are like, do we really need to know this? And I'm like, kinda. You're at least word associate, learn to hypothesize. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
At least, you know, you guys have something at the end, right? Like,
yeah,
sure.
When you pass that test, now you're a nurse, now you're a vet tech. You know, in high school, when you pass the test, that's it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have any bearing or effect on the student whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. The only thing it is in this might be the hot take part, but it is created to judge teachers and it is used mm-hmm. thusly. That we are being judged on.
Well, I mean, our endorsements from the state, from the NCSBN, from all the, you know, they're based on our pass rates. Like if our pass rates aren't high enough, the school gets judged off of that. So, and I'm not saying that that's not a decent metric, but.
But does it not push you to pass kids maybe?
Right.
Right.
That may not end up passing.
Right. Which is how you get those students from high school because we're pushing them.
I meant their licensure pass rates. And it's just, I don't know. Somewhere I feel like we're always evolving. And I do feel like, you know, we're. we're the educators of the age where we can start making some changes, hopefully, if some of these old people will, you know, retire or other things, but leave their jobs. But at the same time, we'll never get to retire, so maybe never. They can't either. So, I mean, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Got any funny or awkward parent interactions?
I mean, yeah. So most of them I probably shouldn't talk about. I will talk about one. We used to go deliver t-shirts at the beginning of school. Our principal, she's great, and I just love her. But she was very adamant that we meet the freshmen and we go and welcome them to the school before they got there. And she also wanted teachers who maybe were of a certain means to kind of be able to see where our students live. Maybe this is not an experience or something that they know because, you know, they have a certain lifestyle in a certain area and they might not know where our kids come from. And she's very big on making sure that we understand where these kids are coming from.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And so another teacher friend of mine, I won't say her name just in case, but we were out. She's incredible and wonderful, but beautiful. And we were delivering the t-shirts. And you know me, I'm in the car. I'm like, you go take this shirt to the door. So she go, and like the way that this man tried to speak to her was like very weird and inappropriate. She runs back, not runs, but she like walks back. She's like, I'm never going by myself again. And that was really awkward. Not for me, but for her, for sure. You know, things like that happen. Parents, sometimes they come in, like I'll walk into the counseling office and I'll be like, oh my God, it smells like, you know, some kind of weed store in here. And it was because some parent has just come in smelling like it. Mm-hmm. You know, or like, what? Yeah. Like a skunk in here. And they're like, Amber, that is a skunk. Oopsie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or they'll wear like really inappropriate shirts with like language on it or pot leaves on it. Like you're wearing that into a school. It's really uncomfortable. Like, am I supposed to acknowledge it or look away? Like, I don't know what to do. Nice shirt.
Oh, I didn't know about what I was putting on this morning. Sure. Y'all, what if, just a little fun, a little bit. What if we were going to get Yelp reviews as teachers? What would your Yelp review be, Amber?
Oh, my God.
How many stars would you get? Huh.
It depends on what part of the semester we are in.
Fair.
Right now I'm teaching the Odyssey, so I think 4 out of 5 stars.
Atta girl.
But maybe earlier in the semester when we're working real hard on grammar, I might get like a 2.
Fair.
What about you, Sierra?
Oh, maybe like a 4.5 on personality, although like real fun, real excited. Reminds me of a schizophrenic cat, but love her teaching.
Oh my word.
Well, they're not going to leave notes on mine, you know, because they're high school students and they can't spell.
Well,
schizophrenic's a big word.
That is true.
She don't let me pay. I'm just kidding. I don't ever police the bathroom. They can pee when they want.
I don't know.
How about you, Thomas?
I don't know what mine would be. I really don't. Well, I never understood what he said, but, you know, he made me laugh.
There you go.
2 out of 5. Do not recommend. I don't know.
Oh, man. Okay. So for all the craziness, there's still something that keeps us coming back, right? We've covered a lot of ground today for sure. So let's move into maybe our last segment of some sort of why are we still here? What are we doing here? Why are we still doing it? So Amber, Thomas, what is the most rewarding part of teaching for you?
You can start that off.
I I wish I could say something really cool, like when the kids learn. I mean, that's great. But honestly, it is the relationships that I make with these kids. It changes me. And if it doesn't change you, then that's probably not where you need to be, especially when you're talking about public school, public education. I mean, I have been humbled in ways that I can't even communicate, you know. I am a better person because I became a teacher and I developed relationships with hundreds of human beings. Many of whom I still talk to.
Probably thousands at this point, girl.
Yeah, so many.
I mean, you've had a bunch.
Yeah. And I still communicate with a lot of them. Actually, I'm going to see Wicked on the 21st with quite a few of 2018 kids. And
I have been changed for good.
I'm so excited. So yeah, I would say the relationships is the most important and rewarding part.
Yeah. Connection. I'll just piggyback off of that and be super unoriginal, but it is.
It's true, though.
But colleagues. Colleague connection, because you know you're in it together. And connection with the students. I teach at a community college, so to use the air.
Yes. It's
community.
Community.
That TV show with the Joel McHale, Community, about a community college. It's
relatable.
He loves that show.
It is super accurate. What about you, Sierra?
Well, I'm going to be triple unoriginal and state that my colleagues, like I have, my boss is out of this world. Like she's fantastic, very supportive. All of the things I've talked about her before, go page. So having that team and who you work with is that make or break.
Mm-hmm.
And we're making it. But the students, I'm just like, how lucky am I to have been in your life and in this process? So like we go hard for 2 years in this material and I'm seeing you multiple times a week and it's going beyond the classroom. And then when they pass their VT&E, it's amazing. And where are you working now and staying in that connection? Or maybe you don't pass your VT&E. Okay, how can I provide extra support? Like you got this. Absolutely. Those connections. So excited to be in their lives because I didn't necessarily have that. Maybe growing up and especially like in school and to feel a part of something and included is amazing. So yeah, all those things.
I love that.
Is there can you guys think about one student on a positive, one student who changed? There was like a big change within you, maybe the way you educated, maybe the way you saw things about education or within yourself.
Yeah, I'm going to need a minute to think about this one.
That's okay. Take your time. I'll go first. So, there's so many students, right? There's so many that I can think of that were such impactful to the program and also myself in my career. But there was one the first semester that I ever taught that she did not like me. She did not like me whatsoever. She at one point was like, "Are you always this energetic? Are you always this excited? Are you always a morning person?" And my friend Lindsay was like, "She's an all the time person. She's like this in the morning, afternoon, evening. And she also works overnight shifts. So she's like this all the time." And I was like, "What do you mean?" I was the least bit offended because I was too excited just to be there. And I remember every day I'd be like, Hi, how's it going? Like an annoying bouncy ball. And she was very much kind of secluded, more introverted, which is fine. I know there's people that are not extroverted like myself, but watching her transition, not to just liking me, that's not the point, but to transition out of her shell, making more connections with her classmates. And then at the end, when we're doing the pinning ceremony and she's graduated, she was so excited and so connected with all these things and watching that growth, that internal personal light bulb and the mental light bulb. She was also really smart too. So Yeah, she reminded me that being myself is good, and also making sure that I remain myself and stay true to myself, but pay attention to not everybody is going to respond in certain different ways. So you have to adapt.
All right, folks, I know it's been a minute since I've done one of these. I used to do these videos all the time, and I'm back doing another one. It's a consumer report. Now, I know we have all had those days where our stomach's like, hey, you remember them tacos you ate? Yeah, we're going to talk about that all day. Well, okay. So lately, I've been using Professor B's Digestive Aids. Because, you know, sometimes your gut needs a little extra tutoring. They use pure honey and these other all natural bee derived and herbal ingredients that are rooted in what's called apitherapy to help promote a healthier gut naturally. It's science meets sweetness, natural sweetness. And honestly, y'all, it works. There's no weird side effects. It's not any kind of weird mystery potion, just natural ingredients doing their job. Plus, Professor B's gave us an exclusive 10% off. Mm-hmm. Just head to profbees.com. That's profbees.com and use code REALLYPOD at checkout. Again, that's profbees.com, promo code REALLYPOD for 10% off any product. Because our digestive systems deserve an A-plus day, too.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot, but I'm trying to
narrow it down. Yeah, same. I feel like there is, and this is going to be a real generic question or real generic answer, but I feel like there's always one every year or semester that just kind of gets under your skin. And I'm not saying that in a bad way.
Sure.
But like just kind of lodges in your brain, in the back of your brain, that you kind of feel not necessarily sorry for, but you kind of empathize for more than others.
Sure. Yeah.
I've had that happen a few times as an educator. My years at ETSU when I was there, adjunct students at ATI. Because you do find out, you know, these students look up to you, even though we really don't, we get them for a chunk of time in their life. But the ones that do look up to you, it's an odd dynamic, you know, kind of like when you're a kid, you think your teachers live at school.
Yeah.
You're in grade school and you think your teachers live at school. Like you think they're just this magical group of humans that, which we are, but like you think they're just this magical group of humans that aren't normal people. Yes. Once you become that, it's an odd feeling. So, I don't know. I can't say a lot of specifics without breaking FERPA, but,
sure.
You know, yeah, I've had one every semester probably, that I've taught, or every year when I was in clinical education, that really impressed upon me. And it's usually the ones the other instructors don't like.
Yes. Sure. Yeah.
That's mine and Amber's kind of through line. I will say we always kind of end up talking about the students that the other instructors don't like. And for some reason we just love them. And I think that's why we were put there.
Oh, you know? Yeah, absolutely. That's
why they were put, you know, the universe put them in our path because they are hard to love. And Amber and I both recognize that at times, so are we. So we all are at times hard to love. And I do think we can give that to them.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I hijacked yours, Amber, but I
would say there's not a specific kid that has changed the way I see public education or see education in general. I would say public education has changed the way I see education in general. Mm-hmm. Every lesson that I've learned, I mean, you know, I've been in meetings with students that have foster families, you know, for whatever reason. Mm. And you can kind of tell that sometimes there might be families who maybe aren't in it for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it just changes like your perspective on why do these kids not care about Shakespeare? Why do these kids not care about Homer? Like, mm-hmm. why am I having such a hard time getting them to stay awake while I'm teaching mm-hmm. sentence structure? Because they're tired, mm-hmm. because they're hungry, because
they don't have the emotional bandwidth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had, if, like I said before, we've all had our things, but I think I live pretty privileged. I didn't know, when I was young, my mom didn't have a lot of money, but I didn't know, you know, right. I was well loved. Mm-hmm. I had a family who took care of me. I never was hungry. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at me. But some kids don't have that. And I have read, you know, in English, I get the privilege of really kind of helping them to develop their writing. And a lot of that comes from personal experience. And I have read things that have made me feel mm-hmm. stuff these kids are going through, mm-hmm. and I have no idea. And like, why in the world mm-hmm. would he or she care about this right now?
Right.
And this is what's going on in their home. And so I think public education changed the way I look at education mm-hmm. and what is important at the end of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. Helping them find their voice.
Love that.
Yeah.
Well, that was deep, and I loved it.
No,
I loved it. I loved it.
I can tell you a story.
No.
Well, how about a lesson learned from our students? A funny one.
Well, I'll tell you. One time, I got my yard wienered.
What?
Wienered. I don't know that it taught me a lesson other than make sure you live far away from where you teach.
Like a dog, like a dash hound?
Mm-hmm, wieners. They came in the middle of the night, and I got a text from a neighbor, and she was like, I think there were teenagers in your yard last night, like after midnight. And I'm like, oh God, I go outside, and there's little forks and knives sticking up out of the ground with little Vienna sausages on them.
Oh!
Wienered.
Sierra's mind went to a nasty, vulgar place.
Well, first I thought of a dog, so yeah, calm down.
No, there's little bean sausages, and when I think about them and like what they're going to remember from high school, they're probably not going to remember anything I taught them in theater, because these were theater kids. I might have had one for English, but they are going to remember the night that they came and put Vienna sausages, weenies in my front yard. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that forever. And so I'm glad they
And they'll know sausages. That they felt comfortable enough to do that with you.
Yeah. Community.
Yeah.
And they knew that I knew who it was, because I immediately sent them a message on the Remind app, not with my phone. And I said, did you put weenies in my yard? And they just sent back that we can't use a laughing emoji anymore, but it was like the skull and crossbones, which means laughing, I guess now.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. So I knew it was them.
You knew.
I love them. I love them. And if you're listening, you know who you are. And I love you.
I love that. That's perfect.
Let me ask. Okay. Well, this will be last thing before we go into our last segment. Let me ask real quick. Amber, this will be a Gen Alpha word of the week on the fly.
Oh.
No. What does 6-7 mean?
6-7.
What
okay, I know what it is. So here's what I think, and okay. what I've pieced together. There was just some weird TikTok video of a kid that did it, and I don't know why. I don't understand it, but they pick up on the weirdest things. And I'll tell you what, it does not bug me, because I live through bottle flipping, and I will take 6-7 all day long.
I wondered if it was like the only thing I can it. I've heard some of the youths say it, and the only thing I can figure is maybe it means mid.
It means nothing.
Oh, okay.
It literally
it means nothing.
But I will tell you this: since the onset of 6-7, you literally say 6-7 more than you think you do. Like anytime you're going to give a number, you're always like, I don't know, 6 or 7 every time.
Okay.
Watch yourself.
I was going to say. So now we got to pay attention to that.
Ugh, yeah.
Okay. It doesn't bother me. There, I promise you, there's way worse ones.
Yeah, it makes me think of a little 5, 6, 7, 8. Like, here we go, jazzercise. And I thought it was like, ooh, five, six, seven, eight. But they were leaving out the five and the eight.
Well, they stop saying them when you do it too. So like when teachers start incorporating their whatever language that they use it, then they are like, okay, we're not doing this anymore because Miss Davis is.
Oh. So
that's how you fight back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, Amy. God.
We just learned something.
Last year it was Skibbity Toilet. So six, seven is
that's hard. We've done that one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've done that one.
Not there for that.
No. All right, Amber and Sierra, where are you going to really spend that money this week?
Well, I'm happy to say that I'm going to spend it at the Drip-O-Lator.
Okay.
And I visited there just recently, but I've had various friends go there often. I needed some coffee stat, okay. And I needed something greasy. Okay. And it took care of that for me. The Drip-O-Lator is they've got several locations, Black Mountain, Candler, Gerber, no idea what that is, Tunnel, I assume Road, and Biltmore Village, which is where I went to. Yes, it was quite wonderful, very convenient. And you could set up a little laptop and also study there, which you should, because I'm going to give some homework. It's at Drip-O-Lator Coffee House. You can find them on Instagram and then on Facebook. Just type in Drip-O-Lator and you will find it.
Okay, thank you. Amber, where are you going to go spend your money?
Listen, my stepdad's sister was here from Texas, and we took her to Pins and Friends.
Yes. Shout out Martin Robinette.
On stage. Martin and Chip, they own it, and it is duck pin bowling, which is so much easier than regular bowling.
It is.
Funner. And they have food, and they have lots of drinking. Mm-hmm. It's super, super fun. It's located on State Street in Bristol on the Tennessee side, and mm-hmm. you can find them on the gram at Pins and Friends 1, or look them up on Facebook, just Pins and Friends.
Yes, I love that. All right. Mine is the Really Pod Shop. That's right. We went live a couple of weeks ago. The Really Pod Shop at reallypodshop.myshopify.com. We have a really amazing, it's sitting here looking at me, insulated water bottle. Is it not amazing, Amber?
It's stay hydrated.
Beautiful. It's got mine and Sierra's face on it, so you can't get any better. And then we have hats. We got koozies. We got stickers. We got car magnets. We got all sorts of that Christmas ornaments. Hello. It's just in time for the season. Y'all go to reallypodshop.myshopify.com and get your people some stuff. We've already been selling some sweatshirts and hoodies, and I think we sold a few hats. So I love it. Come support us. We are now your small business. All right. Final thing. If you could teach one lesson to everyone, what would it be, Amber?
Keep an open mind on everything.
Absolutely.
Open that mind up and experience everything that you can.
Sierra?
We don't get paid to judge.
Oh. I feel like I do.
I tell my students when they're interacting with clients, you don't get paid to judge. Don't judge people.
Oh, that
with I was, their pets.
They're on week grade.
out in the field on the floor.
Sure. In the
we world. Don't get paid to judge.
Okay. Well, the one I would teach everybody is do not do the time warp on a treadmill. All right, folks. Until next time, write neatly, stay caffeinated, stay hydrated, and don't forget, grading rubrics are the closest thing to a Bible for teachers, and we love them. All right. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Amber.
Thank you, Amber.
Thanks, guys.
Really, with Sierra and Michael Thomas, is produced by Griff Chap Studio, LLC. The views and opinions expressed by host Sierra and Michael Thomas are their own and do not reflect those of their employers. Copyright 2025, Griff Chap Studio, LLC, all rights reserved.